SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. What a fun weekend. Weather could not dissuade us. Hope it didn't dissuade you. Obviously, Oaklawn in particular. If they had gone any longer yesterday and Saturday night, they'd have to send the jockeys out with miners' helmets. It was, well, the fog rolled in, I know, on Saturday, and that made it, you know, that made it impossible. Fixed off for doing the best he could. But even last night, watching after Monomoy Girl had come back and successfully. It was a weekend of mixed results for returning champions. We'll talk about that. It was dark and dank and damp and didn't stop anything, though. Good weekend of racing. And there's a lot to absorb, obviously. We'll wade into it. I'm just answering Claude Ray, who's gone fishing. With Shug tomorrow. He's out fishing today. He reeled in his third Fountain of Youth, though, on Saturday with greatest honor. And we will talk greatest honor, and we will talk the intricacies, as we often do, after controversial figure-making from the Beyer team. Andy Beyer will join us first. And I reached out to Andy. In fact, even before I reached out to him, the calls were coming on social media. Are you having Andy on Monday? Yes, 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 absolutely. Now, I'll let Andy explain. It's funny how greatest honor is been a flashpoint and a discussion point on figures, because the Holy Bull was questionable to start with. And, there was a school of thought on most scales that the Holy Bull effort, was faster than it came back from Beyer. And then came Saturday, where the two main track 3-year-old races laid on the card, the big upset, which big upset, but there were a couple of clues. There were, in fact, clues. And that filly, Hol Bodemeister, there's an interesting story behind there, including the New York bred stakes mare that Tom Bush trained. Whole lot of shaken. Yeah, those owner breeders, they spent $200,000 on Whole Lot of Shaken, and they've bred her to really nice mares, to nice stallions, including there's an Arrogate weanling right now, and there's a Union Rags 2-year-old. She either slipped or was reset the year before. But this Bodemeister filly, for those of you that have already signed on and downloaded Form to Win, she was second, essentially, behind Vequist on Form to Win. In fact, the trifecta was there to be had. The trifecta was second, third, and fourth on Form to Win behind Vequist. Pretty interesting. So anyway, Hol Bodemeister and greatest honor. Their efforts, at a glance, it seemed like the races weren't going to come back fast. And right away, you know, the raw number, the preliminary figure for greatest honor was an 83. And, you know, visually, obviously, it was super impressive. And, you know, this explosive turn of foot that he's got on the turns, well, that's going to play well at, let's face it, at Churchill, you know, assuming everything goes well. That's a derby move. Nobody that watches that, you know, will misjudge what, you know, what kind of a punch this horse is packing. The question is, you know, he's going to have to get faster, and there's reason to believe that under a mile and an eighth and a mile and a quarter, that he will. Certainly Shug feels that way. And Shug, if you heard him after the race with Acacia Courtney, Shug said, he's just happy to get the mile and a 16th out of the way. So we'll talk to Shug tomorrow about greatest honor and, you know, his thoughts on the development. I'll say one thing. I'm sure Allison McGahee was happy for greatest honor to win, because there was a point in the race where you thought, even if he rallies, he's not going to catch Drain at this point. He's, you know, gave him the slip, and certainly a really nice effort. You know, we had such a fun conversation about Drain the Clock with Nick Cassato. I'm sure they're happy with that effort. Don't know if mile and an eighth is in his scope, but, you know, certainly a placement off the swale in a race like the Fountain of Youth. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what their thoughts are about going forward and trying a mile and an eighth. You know, certainly a racetrack that plays to, you know, that kind of speed. And that's one of the reasons you thought, well, greatest honor's in trouble here, and he's not going to get there. And then in literally, I mean, what, 300 yards? He comes kind of loping. he's kind of a big lopey thing. And he ends up winning eased up. I mean, once he passed Drain the Clock, you know, Ortiz coasted home. So we'll talk to Andy in about 12 minutes. We'll get Andy Beyer to explain the intricacy of the figure-making process and why greatest honor has become so problematic. Speaking of the three-year-old results, Essential Quality, of course, on the Southwest front. It'll be a little difficult to digest the performances over the wet track both days, but things were obviously pretty formful. I mean, everybody that was kind of counted on, you know, from a expectation standpoint, either met or exceeded. And certainly, I would say that, you know, certainly the two Godolphins at Hot Springs exceeded. Mystic Guide, Mike Stidham will join us in hour two after MIG. We'll talk to Stidham. And we're actually going to have a couple of Godolphin conversations, because it's very close between, you know, owner of the weekend, between Godolphin and Eclipse. Eclipse had a magical day on Saturday at Gulfstream. They sent six horses out. They won four races. They were only eligible to win five because they had the entry mates going in the Here Comes the Bride. And when Spanish Love Affair got taken down, Conlima got put up. So Eclipse was in position with the very questionable and somewhat bizarre decision to put Spanish Love Affair behind I get it. I don't get it. I don't think anybody got it. I know some people said, "Oh, it was obvious." No, it wasn't obvious. It to use the Seth Merrow measurement system on inquiries, that was like an 80-20 out of 100 times, maybe even an 88-12. I thought that was just a preposterous decision. And I know, I mean, for Gary Barber and for Mark Cassie, it was stomach churning. So we'll talk to Mark Cassie. We'll let Cassie tell you exactly how annoyed he is. it was part of a largely frustrating day to get back to the owner front. I suppose the three owners from Saturday, I mean, prominent owners that were eligible for owner of the week. do we have owner of the week? We do this week. Was Godolphin and Eclipse and Gary Barber. And Gary had a very frustrating, I imagine, not the kind of Saturday he was hoping for, between the disqualification of Spanish Love Affair and Olympic runner got nailed by that tremendous ride. What a ride Junior Alvarado put on. Holy cow, that was was that the Canadian? Yeah, the Canadian. Venezuelan hug for Gargan. Junior Alvarado made all the difference and nailed Olympic runner. And then, of course, Vequist's return did not go well. Doesn't seem to be anything amiss. And Butch Reed and team will keep an eye on her. But a distressing return for Vequist. So it was not a great afternoon at Gulfstream for the pink and black. I did say to Gary Barber, they say that Got Stormy won, but it can't be her because she wasn't wearing the pink jacket. So, no, Got Stormy comes back, and we'll talk to Cassie about that performance in the Honey Fox. And actually, we can use the visit from Cassie as an opportunity to check in on Soup and Sandwich 2 from the other day at Tampa. Cassie had, you know, quite a bit going on, so we'll get Mark in here hour 3, 11 o'clock. You can look forward to a Cassie visit. But anyway, back to the ownership sequence. Amazing weekend for Godolphin, winning 3 graded stakes, and Mystic Guide really announces himself. I mean, as if he, you know, didn't already have, you know, qualifications and you know, some bona fides. Bona fides was the watchword of the weekend. Although he's a suitor, did not run great at Sam Houston on Saturday night. Mystic Guide is clearly going to be a major force going forward this year, and a welcome confirmation, in fact, from him. There was a couple like this Saturday between Mystic Guide's effort and that Fearless. The question is, with Fearless, how sound is he? I mean, he's really had, you know, his share of you know, careerus interruptus, as it were. So anyway, Mystic Guide, Essential Quality, and Antoinette. Godolphin with 3 graded stake wins. Jimmy Bell. I invited Jimmy Bell. I said, come take a victory lap. So Jimmy Bell this hour after Andy Beyer. So here's the quick rundown, and then we'll go back to, I mean, there's so much. It's one of those really fun Saturdays to digest. Andy Beyer, Jimmy Bell, Rich Migliori. We'll get Mig's perspective on the weekend racing. Mike Stidham, as mentioned, I suppose with both Jimmy and Mike Stinnem visiting, maybe we get a little bit more about the decision-making process for him. The speculation, one of the speculation points was Maydan, which you can understand, given ownership. So World Cup possibilities. See what Jimmy Bell thinks, and then I'll have to text Mike Stidham and I don't want him countermanding Jimmy's take and whatever the smoke signals are regarding Mystic Guide. But yeah, Mystic Guide, essential quality, and Antoinette, and she wins the very one. Kind of blew it there. I thought she intuned and California Queen the first time North America, and then when I wrote the races up and I bet, I left her off. I was kicking myself. It was over for multi-race wagers anyway at that point because of what happened with the Devona Dale winner, that whole Bodemeister shocker at 52-1. But in addition to Bell and Stidham, Cassie, Papo Morales will be by. We'll do a recap of the Form to Win results. And there were a bunch of, using Form to Win as a compass, some very nice numbers, some really nice returns. The allowance race with Saif as well at Gulfstream. That Gulfstream 10th Form to Win all over it. And at Turfway Friday night, I will talk to James Scully in hour three. Speaking of victory tours, James with a terrific weekend. James put you on Hush of a Storm. And in fact, gave out the try for the Battaglia. And very nice result it was. Haven't had a chance to reach out to Bill Morey yet, but we will. Probably get Bill Morey tomorrow. Because certainly want to talk to him about Hush of a Storm. Was very good in here. Got a respectable fig. High mid-80s, right? 86. And probably just, points right ahead for the Jeff Ruby. And this was one, that performance on the Tapita leading into this by Hush of a Storm, the race two back, the maiden win, then an allowance win as well. But that was the fastest race anybody had run in this group. And the horse goes off at 7-1. So great job by almost 7-1. Great job by James. And we'll get some thoughts from him in hour three on all three preps, the Southwest result and on the Fountain of Youth as well. Since I mentioned Turfway, I'll mention the Ray Hernandez winner as well of the Cincinnati Trophy, 15-1 on her. This is the Carpe Diem filly, bred by SF and Hartwell Farm. Wait for Nairobi. And she was put up. This was a filly that had not crossed the wire first, but she was put up on a DQ and ran a big race there. And in fact, just looking at buyers, I think it was the second, tied for the second highest buyer coming into this. And goes off at 15-1. Has done nothing but improve virtually with every start. It took her six tries, and yes, she did get put up, but she shouldn't have been 15-1 in this race. So we'll talk. Actually, we probably will bring up this the Turfway results with Cassie because Gretzky the Great came back and set the pace, got tired, got beat, a length and change, ended up settling for third, but was beaten at even money. So we'll get an update on him as well. Not a terrible comeback. But, you know, as I mentioned, part of what was a frustrating, undoubtedly a frustrating weekend for Gary Barber and some of his partners. I mentioned Eclipse, too, as part of the, you know, the weekend. Four wins for them. And then I think they added another one yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. Andy Beyer is going to join us here momentarily, and we'll talk about, in fact, we'll talk right now because Andy Beyer is standing by. Andy, good morning.
Good morning. Actually, I'm sitting by, but how are you, Steve?
I'm good. I'm good. First conversation of the new year, and I think we probably could have reached out after the Holy Bull because it's really a similar discussion, and greatest honor again, the you know, the linchpin to this. I don't want to call it a controversy, but certainly the figure was up for discussion. Let's say that.
Well, to me, we can you know, we can kind of fine tune you know, the discussion a little about whether the figure should be 2 or 3 points higher or whatever, but this, you know, there's no discussion about whether this was like a really good figure that makes you a Kentucky Derby figure, a Kentucky Derby contender. In neither case, was it a fast race?
Maybe we should start with the, I have it here, the Holy Bull, because that was a race that was up for discussion, and you know, essentially when it got an 89, pretty much every other team figure wise had the race faster. And I know you had it on the watch list. You know, talk about the original figure for the Bull, and then, you know, what went into Saturday.
Well, in both cases were very similar in one respect. The they were run at a mile and a 16th, and in each case it was the only mile and a 16th race, right, on the card. I mean, for some reason, our Gulfstream has just not been running many two-turn races at all this season. I just looked up this morning. In 4 months, there have been, you know, 14 dirt races at a mile and a 16th. So when, you know, we have, you know, based on years and decades of evidence, you know, we have established the relationship of times at different distances, and in the you know, in the Holy Bull, the figure we normally would have made based on those calculations came up a bit low. Mark Hopkins, who was my partner, who does the Gulfstream figures, thought that possibly there was just, you know, some idiosyncrasy at the mile and a 16th, and we would err on the side of generosity and bump the figure up a little bit. I was still an 89 was as high as we reasonably could go, and I frankly didn't understand, you know, when I saw some comments, oh well, how could this be so low? The horse had run four times. His figures were 72, 77, 79, 83. You know, he'd just won a maiden race by a length and a half. I mean, the horse he'd beaten was a turf horse whose best figure on grass had been a 75. I mean, how was this supposed to be a great figure? I would say 89, hit it right on the head. On Saturday, we had a similar situation. The day looked pretty straightforward, and then using our normal calculations, the Fountain of Youth came up slow again, and now we're wondering if something has kind of fundamentally changed at Gulfstream that our mile and a 16th adjustment needs to be changed, and sometimes racetracks, for reasons we usually don't understand, just may change, and the relationships that have stood the test of time suddenly don't anymore. So once again, we increase the figure. It originally came up in 83, and that was just obviously much too low, and so an 89 again seemed to make sense. But if we have an issue with the mile and a 16th times, it's small. It's a couple points, and there's just no way that either of these races could have earned a good figure. I thought Greatest Honor did a nice job. Drain the clock. The speed horse on the rail, got a clear lead, and Greatest Honor, kicked it in pretty well to run him down. So with his pedigree and running style, he's clearly got the style for the Derby, but he just wasn't fast, and at this stage of the season, I couldn't anoint any horse running an 89 as his best race, as a real Derby contender.
And part of this that for people to help understand why a figure like this works is to go down the chart, to drain the clock, Papitou, Tarantino, and even that Giraffales. Everybody keeps making fun of this horse, and he's now picked up the last check, the last significant check in yep. Graded Stakes twice. Even his figure, a 49 breaking his maiden as a 2-year-old, then the Holy Bull is 62, and fair to assume that he improved again, 73 buyer. You look at Tarantino, he paired up 80 from the Holy Bull to the Fountain.
Right.
Happy Two, he had regressed in the Holy Bull off the big effort in the Mucho Macho Man, and he came back toward his career high, an 83. These figures all just make sense.
Yeah, and this is something I appreciate your explaining to your listeners. You don't just when you're looking at speed figures and you just want to make sure that they make sense, you look at the race in its entirety, not just at one horse. And if most of the horses in the race are get a figure that's much higher than they normally run or much lower than they normally run, there may be something wrong. But you want them the numbers to fit together like the piece of a puzzle. Drain the clock, who the aforementioned pace setter in the Fountain of Youth, he'd run back-to-back 85s at Gulfstream. Now he's stretching out to a mile and a 16th. He fades at the end. He gets a figure of 86, so he's right in the ballpark where he's supposed to run.
Well, and even if you go down to an interesting horse coming into the race, I certainly didn't. Nobody would have questioned the Wyckoffs and Mike Maker taking a shot on the dirt with Fire at Will. But Fire at Will, even with a 56, beaten 20 lengths, even that makes sense because his 60 something on the dirt on an off the turf race at 7/8 at Saratoga in an allowance. So from every vantage point, this makes good sense, and you'll obviously keep tracking as the season continues at Gulfstream. How do you make a determination? At what point, Andy, do you adjust the beaten length scale?
Well, we're gonna we're going to undertake a review of all the mile and a 16th races and see if something has changed since last year. And but I can't imagine that if we make a change, it would be more than like 2 or 3 points. It's not going to dramatically affect the races we've been talking about.
From a 3-year-old standpoint too, since we're together, let's also talk about dealing with the wet track at Oaklawn. And I mean, these were two sloppy days, and I haven't even mentioned the Monomoy Girl return. She ran a typical Monomoy Girl race. She got a 96, but on Saturday, those were big efforts. Mystic Guide, particularly Mike Stidham, is going to join us later this morning, and we'll probably get Brad Cox tomorrow. But some thoughts about the wet track and how trustworthy. I mean, how do you look at those efforts on such a wet track to evaluate
the figures for the day made sense. I mean, sometimes wet tracks will just be we'll just be nutsy you're tearing your hair out, trying to make sense of it. But the day was really pretty consistent from start to finish, and there were no question about the number. I mean, Central Quality, I thought, did very well. It ran a figure of 96. I mean, it wasn't a blockbuster, but it's his first race back on an unfamiliar surface. I mean, he certainly did well. I was disappointed in Jackie's Warrior, who, as a 2-year-old, had run the best figure of the year, and I thought was... You're going to be the lone speed in the Southwest field. I mean, he was a disappointment, and I guess you've got to really question his his distance going ability. But Essential Quality, at this stage, you can't knock him.
No, an impressive way to come back, and then nice to see a horse like Mystic Guide, start to knock on the door of the 110 level. That's what handicap horses are supposed to run.
Yeah, when we were, as the day was progressing, I said, gee, well, the one. Randy Moss does her Oaklawn figures, but I follow Oaklawn, so I was following along. I said, well, this track really has changed, because Mystic Guide ran so fast. But with the benefit of hindsight, he got good at the end of his 3-year-old season. And now horses frequently will make a big step forward, when they turn 4. So the 108 is certainly not out of the question, and he beat horses who wound up running kind of their usual numbers. So he's going to be a real force against the older horses this season.
Now we're going to have to see what, and we'll find out actually in just a few minutes after the break, because Jimmy Bell is going to join us from Godolphin, who, you know, was last year's Eclipse winning owner and is off to another impressive start. I mean,
I wonder, you know, if they're going to go to the Dubai, take him to the Dubai World Cup, or if he's been nominated, because he would. I'd make a future book bet if there were one available.
Well, we're going to see. We'll find out literally in minutes from Jimmy Bell and how close they are to a decision. They're also, of course, sitting on Maxfield. And speaking of which, Maxfield committing to going out to the big cap. So that was an interesting development over the weekend.
Oh, yep. I will be watching Mystic Guide with real interest. I mean, it's always nice to see horses, you know, kind of surprise you and really get good like this. So, I mean, I think he's going to be a star this year.
Well, it's March 1st, and it feels like the march toward, you know, the serious racing really picked up a lot of steam this weekend. Andy, as always, appreciate the opportunity to, you know, flesh this kind of thing out.
Good to talk to you, Steve.
Always great. Bye-bye. Andy Beyer, everybody, and Beyer Associates. Wanted to make sure you understood what went into that figure. Because the raw number, the preliminary, you know, came back, you know, very low. But then, you know, with adjustment and, you know, adding in the variant, makes perfect sense. And you know, that was a question, you know, Andy mentioned. I mean, it certainly makes it easier for figure makers if there's, you know, more than one race on a card at the configuration, at the distance. I mean, another mile in a 16th race might have been nice, would have helped. I mean, there was mostly one turn. Everything else was, you know, one turn dirt racing, including the allowances and, you know, the other stake and the maiden races, you know, the maiden fillies that started the day. That nice George Weaver had a nice winner to start the day. That passed the champagne. This for Randy Hill and Black Type and Rock Ridge Racing and Black Ridge Racing. A flatter filly, and with Johnny won it 4-5 and came back with an 85 buyer. There was the maiden winner of Safi Joseph's that's headed to the Florida Derby. That was also pretty impressive. And that one was Collaborate. This is another Into Mischief yet. And Collaborate was, I think, the fifth race, and breaks the maiden off by a dozen. If you didn't see it, out of the nice Quiet Temper, which I'm, if I'm not mistaken, was Dale. Almost positive that was Dale Romans. And so Collaborate, second start for Three Chimneys and Bob Edwards. Yeah, and the rest, yeah, there was the attachment rate allowance win. That was another hit for the terrific call by Scully. That was another of Scully's hits for the weekend. Yeah, everything else. There was the Gulfstream Mile. That was Fearless. You know, so there was nothing else to compare, you know, the mile and 16th races to. Makes it a little, you know, not that, you know, racing offices need to schedule their cards based on, you know, the needs of figure makers, but it helps. Let's do this. Let's take the break, Case, and we'll come back and visit with Jimmy Bell and talk about all the success Godolphin had on Saturday. Three graded stake wins. They've already got four on the year in the first 60 days. Maxfield as well. We talk about Maxfield going to the big cap. And we'll see. We'll see if Jimmy's got any decisions yet about Mystic Guide, and whether he's going to go to Maydan. Back after this, at the races, just getting going. Stay with us.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, a little less than 20 to the top of the hour. Rich Migliori ahead, as well as Mike Stidham, and Jimmy Bell joins us now from Godolphin after a pretty magical Saturday. Three graded stake wins, and now already four on the year for the 2020 Eclipse Award winning owner of the year. Jimmy, well done. Congratulations.
That was most definitely a most memorable weekend for sure. You have to look back awful far to have anything to come remotely close to that one. That was it's hard to hit the bullseye once, much less three times.
Well, and, you know, there's really certain elements to the day that, you know, were, I'd say, you know, had added significance. You know, you bring back the two-year-old champion, and, you know, that adds to the butterfly factor.
We had plenty of butterflies. They were going the whole weekend, and truly the anticipation is well documented how that race got moved three times. So that'll get the stirring a lot of emotions just early on, and just grateful and thankful that we got to run. You know, certainly wasn't over a racetrack anybody was looking forward to, but at the same time, they all got around there safe and came back in good order, and we moved forward. So, you know, I've got to be careful what I say. I remember kind of telling everybody in each one of those three cases with Antoinette and Mystic Guide and Essential Quality, I said, I'm sure there's plenty of rust on them, and, you know, it's good just to get going, but to see them come back and really perform the way all three did was hard to imagine.
Well, and one of the sidebars to the way things unfolded with the three wins, three different outfits that you guys use, which I think is kind of fun.
Yeah, that really is. That's something that I think internally we're very excited about. We're very, very, very pleased with you know, with Brad and with Brendan Walsh, even, you know, with Maxfield, of course, Billy Mott, nothing needs to be said there. And Mike Stidham's just been a phenomenal addition to the team. And each and every one of these people, trainers, have made a tremendous contribution in more ways than one. And we're just so excited. And it's also nice to see it spread around and to be able, that was one of our objectives, was to try to have a little different geographic reach with the overall racing program, and hence the addition to those guys. And boy, they all been great additions to the team.
Let's talk essential quality, and you brought in a couple of the factors that had to come to bear on this. Wins the Breeders' Cup and ends the two-year-old season undefeated. Then you've got this moving target, and this obviously wasn't a spot that he absolutely has to win. It's nice to be undefeated, but that's not anybody's priority. Talk just about the mentality and the interplay from the organization, Jimmy, and the trainers, using essential quality as the focal point, because clearly a Derby win has been a goal of Godolphin since they started racing in the United States.
Well, there's no question, and to sort of start with that point, one of the great things about being a part of this organization and being led by His Highness Sheikh Mohammed is that, and I say this so often, he's so philosophical, and while certainly he would love to win a Kentucky Derby, he's so philosophical about if it's meant to be, it will be. He doesn't really have to force it to make it happen, and he lets it sort of unfold organically and naturally. And that, I think, that sort of matriculates through the entire operation on a pressure factor, that it's great if it works, and if it doesn't, all we're doing is continue to try and hope these are the type of races we can continue to point to. So really, that's a great feeling and a great testament to the operation, is that really that pressure does not come from the top down whatsoever. So I think that permeates throughout the whole organization, and everybody's doing their best, and being the horseman that he is, he recognizes that. So that's good. Getting back to central quality, I don't know about anybody. I certainly had trepidations about coming off the layoff, shipping up there, not having really trained over that racetrack, and then seeing the racetrack that you were going to run over. And I think, telling myself that hopefully we'll certainly learn one thing today, if he can handle the slop. So trying not to make it the beginning of the end all. This is the beginning of the journey, not the end of the journey. And, I think when you have very talented horses, they have a tendency of overcoming things that would, your average horse or certain a lesser degree finds to be troubling. And he certainly doesn't need to take his race. Take his racetrack anywhere. So that's another testament to his overall ability, that I think he handles pretty much any situation that's been thrown at him.
And one thing too, a horse that wins on introduction going three quarters, that was at Churchill. So you got the fast track at Churchill as a back pocket kind of thing, and then immediately stretch it out successfully in the Breeders, and then of course the Juvenile. So starts the 3-year-old season really with a stylish effort, and took even a modest step forward from a figure standpoint. He's by Tappet out of an Elusive Quality mare, and it just seems like he's got style and substance. So the next plan, I suppose, is the avenue toward Derby, and with the Rebel coming up so quick now, of course, Arkansas Derby, you stay there, or do you think about even something like the Bluegrass and going back to Keeneland?
Well, I think as we've all observed and have learned, flexibility is the key to this, to any of these things, as Mother Nature seems to get to have the final call in most all of these situations. I think it was Brad's plan from day one that he said early on, I want to have two preps before the Derby. And he most definitely wanted to come back in a mile and 16th, not a mile and 8th. So I think that's where the Southwest really came to the forefront. And, from there, obviously the next races will most likely be the mile and 8th, and that's fine. One thing you alluded to earlier is race going three quarters, and it really shows the versatility, and I think that gives everybody certainly a great degree of comfort and confidence that he's, you know, he's shown speed going sprinting distances, and obviously the longer the better he seems to perform. So I would say the bluegrass would certainly be in the works of things, but, you know, having had some success there, and you know, the good news is he's had races at Keeneland and at Churchill, so we've certainly taken that first big step, and I'm glad to see there was very little, if any, rust on him. And as I jokingly said, there didn't seem to be a lot of rust, but certainly got plenty of mud. But we had a great day, and it's just a testament to how talented he is, probably.
Well, and then I suppose when it comes to the decision-making process for Brad and you, 3 weeks between Arkansas and Kentucky, or 4 weeks between Bluegrass and Derby. So it you know, it's a matter of you want to come back you know, out of the, you know, the penultimate start toward Derby. Do you want 3 weeks or do you want 4 weeks? That'll be the, I'm sure, a big part. He's already a dual grade one winner. So, you know, the grade two status of the Bluegrass versus the grade one of the Arkansas, a little less of a factor. I think it, you know, pretty clear where he probably will stand after his career. So you're not worried about, you know, knocking off grade ones as much, you know, is that part of the decision-making process at all for you?
Absolutely, Steve. It's all about how best can you get him to that first Saturday in May, and you know, you're not ducking the idea of that's not the objective, because that certainly is. And I think in fairness to Brad, he is, you know, in speaking to him throughout, he says this horse just always seems to be a little ahead of him as far as where he thought he would be or could be or should be fitness wise, and he's just one of those types that seems to keep himself in pretty good shape no matter if it's downtime or, you know, trying to get ready for these big races. So the timing, the time between the races is probably paramount. And I believe that, as you rightly pointed out, this is, I think he can rest on his laurels of what he's accomplished as far as grade one status. So I think the pure objective is how best can we get to that first Saturday in May.
Essential Quality, who surprisingly, this I'm just noticing this on a earnings leaderboard. I mean, Thunder Snow, the all-time leader in terms of the way Equibase keeps track of earnings, which includes Dubai and North America. But he was he's a world traveler. He's earned $14 million. Essential Quality's earned $1.785 million, and for a horse that's only run in North America, he's Godolphin's essentially, you know, the leading earner that Godolphin has had in North America.
Well, when you knock off a couple of grade ones in a Breeders' Cup, you make up for a lot of time in a short order. So there's no question about that. And you know, it's not often that you have one that's already into his 3-year-old year and has yet to taste defeat. So he's in some rare company for Godolphin worldwide, and certainly in America.
Well, let's talk about Mystic Guide, and we'll fold Maxfield into the conversation too, Jimmy, because he was in the news over the weekend with the decision to go out west, and very, very cool, actually, that Maxfield will contest the big cap. But talk about Mystic Guide, and I'll let Stidham dote on him in a little bit, but really feels like this, you know, fairly lightly raced 4-year-old, there's a lot ahead for him off of this 4-year-old debut.
Well, you know, a lot of credit goes to Mike and Hillary, and I'm sure you'll get into that a little later. The patience and horsemanship that they've shown with him throughout is just now being, you know, they're reaping the benefits of that. You know, he didn't really make his first start until February of last year, and, you know, showed a lot of promise, but he was just sort of that gawky kid a little bit. It just wasn't a finished product, and we sort of certainly took a more conservative route. You get tempted a little bit, as you well know, when they move the Derby around, and now maybe we can make up for some lost time a little later in the year, but certainly to Mike's credit and Hillary, you know, we went a different path, and kind of needed to have that breakthrough race. He had that in the Jim Dandy, was, you know, and then came back in the Jockey Club and ran a all but a winning race, just beaten there. And, you know, he hadn't run since October of last year, so that's a long time, almost 4 months. And, you know, Mike was just saying for this Razorback race how he couldn't be any better and any have a greater feel for him than having a big performance. And wow, did he really, really, took a and had a heck of a run there. It took the overland route and doing it. So he truly was much the best in that race and showed that the patience and the maturity. And now I think we're probably ready to really take on his, you know, that top end handicap competition. And he's rightfully at that point now.
I'll go over some of the development stuff with Michael, but immediately the question was asked about the potential to go to Maidan versus planning a continuation of the domestic campaign. It's only been 48 hours, but what insight can you provide there?
I would say that all options are on the table. I think that regardless, if he were to stay here and work out a pretty good campaign, it gets a little more interesting later in the year with those races. It seems, you know, these early months are not so much the focus. As we're taking Maxwell out to California for the Grade 1 Santa Anita Handicap. We'll kind of play the Dubai or versus staying here. That's kind of a further and future discussion, truthfully. I think this was so important to see where we're at, as you well know, making that transition from 3 to 4 is sometimes as much as it is from 2 to 3. So a little bit was, let's see where we're at, let's see what we have, and certainly I think the horse answered any questions as far as what kind of competition he can perhaps entertain and the distance that he thinks we can do it. So I think he's a horse that's can certainly, from a mile and eighth to a mile and a quarter, be very, very effective. And that kind of leaves all those races in conversation.
You know, one thing I'll mention, just, you know, looking at him, you know, with this step forward and running this kind of a race, his dam, for those that, you know, that are somewhat, you know, recent to the game, but you go back, 10, 12 years. Music Note was about as versatile and as terrific a filly as, you know, you had in that era. And, you know, what's notable about her is that, you know, she was able to win a race like the Ballerina at 7/8, as well as things like the Coaching Club and the Mother Goose and the Beldame and so forth. I mean, she, you know, she had sprint speed when she needed it, and she could stretch out. And, you know, then you fold in whatever Gosapper brings to this party, and it's very exciting. And he reminds me of as much of Music Note as he does of Gosapper.
I would 100% agree with that. And what I might add as well, maybe I should have thought about it more before the race on Saturday, is that she won a couple Grade Ones in the Slop and the Mud as well. So she
That's
was
true.
What she was one of those that could handle all courses, all distances, as you said. And you know, Questing was ended up being a champion 3-year-old filly, and rightfully so. You know, she won the 3-year-old races that sort of made that a somewhat of an easier decision. But I would contest that perhaps Music Note's probably, in my mind, probably the best filly mare that we've run over here. She was as hickory and as genuine as any really any horses that we've had in Godolphin over here. So I would put her nearly at the, if not the very top of our female performers. And it's so gratifying to kind of see that come through in one of her offspring. It's not easy, as you well know. They don't often replicate themselves, but I think Mr. Guide is certainly doing great honor to his mom.
Did Saeed Bin Sarur train her throughout?
Yes, sir. Yes.
He did, huh? Okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember if he had her right, you know, right from the get-go, but this is a pretty nice way to start the 4-year-old season. We'll talk more about Mystic Guide with Mike Stidham in hour two. That brings us around Jimmy Bell with us from Godolphin, and Jimmy Antoinette, talk about a seasonal comebacker. That was just about perfect.
Well, it truly was, and you know, a credit to Billy Mott, you know, which needs little, being the Hall of Famer he was at the age he's been doing this for quite a while, and to bring, you know, in all three of these cases, and in fairness to, you know, Mike and to Brad and to Billy, all three of these wins were coming off pretty good, you know, 3-4 month layoffs, and it's just, you know, people might not realize how difficult that is to sort of get them back to that racing shape without squeezing too much and trying to, you know, anticipate a long racing season, but yet to have them be able to perform on the day, first time off the bench and going a mile in 3/16 as well. So, you know, she's been an interesting filly for us, and really has shown a lot of dimensions as well. You know, you've seen her run on the turf, run on the dirt, run some big grade one races on both surfaces. And she, you know, she looks like she's ready for a good campaign this year. So very, just, you know, very excited to see her so fresh and so sharp, coming off a bit of a long winter.
This performance, notable too, you know, that she has won mostly on the lead. That's where she's been at her best. And you know, here, not only does she take control under Jose Ortiz, but she was, you know, she was powering away and left no doubt. This was a great way to start the 4-year-old campaign. She ended the season, you know, kind of meekly in that Valley View, but otherwise, it was a pretty complete season as a 3-year-old, and notably with her. Do you get a sense, Jimmy, what her best distance might ultimately be? How far or how short, you know, she's going to be at her best?
Well, I tell you, I think what's you touched on it briefly is that what was impressive about not only winning, that's always impressive, but the manner in which she went about it was impressive from the standpoint in a couple of her races earlier. I remember Johnny Velasquez telling Billy that she kind of wanted to idle a little bit and wait on some horses a time or two. When you get on the lead, you're usually got, you know, a target on your back, and you know, she kind of was waiting on horses, and in this race Saturday, it looks like she actually went ahead and drew off, which is, you noted, and hopefully that's a sign of maturity and a little more professionalism and going on and kind of finishing the deal and establishing herself. So her whole cards, it seems, is that she does have some good speed and she can carry it a very long distance, and so usually that combination doesn't always go together for horses that run over a real distance of ground. But you know, she's been able, like you said, she's been able to, when she's able to dictate the pace and dictate the front end a little bit, she's very dangerous. And you know, a lot of horses that want a real distance of ground, a mile and a quarter, a mile and 3/16, they don't usually have that early foot. They're usually ones that kind of come with a rush and finish well. But she's got a running style that's can be troublesome for others in those distance races.
I want to ask too about the 3-year-old sister, because that Havanika that ran against the boys in the El Camino is the baby sister, the 3-year-old.
Yeah, that's a little bit of the same thing. I mean, she's that was a very tenacious and determined effort she did up in the Camino Real Derby up there, and has shown some flashes earlier in her career as well as being quite talented. So that's those are two pretty hickory fillies right there.
What's next for her? Owen Hardy, in fact, she worked, just noticing, she worked half a mile on Saturday.
Yes.
She looking at the Santa Anita Oaks?
There is the Oaks, and I think there is a turf race as well, and I think it would be a game-time decision. But he's certainly looking to run on the day, and, you know, at some point would really – feels like she trains quite well, obviously works well over the dirt, and sees no reason why she wouldn't perform. So, yeah, that's kind of a short-term project right there. And, you know, it may well be she does run in the Oaks, or it may be that she goes back to the grass on a lesser turf course race there.
Well, Havanika, the three-year-old sister of Antoinette, and there's actually a two-year-old coming up behind Havanika, a full sister by Medaglia d'Oro. And now there's also a young yearling by Uncle Mo, a colt, and she hasn't delivered yet. It's early, of course. What's she carrying, Jimmy? Do you know?
If I were, I'd be guessing. I'd probably better take a look. I'm trying to focus more on the ones that are over there in the afternoons.
Well, I think it might be time to go back to hardspun with her and get an Antoinette sibling.
That's been pretty good, Ed.
Yeah, why not? Well, you guys got a decent roster to work from.
Exactly right. That is very, very true. We've got a very, very active roster. And the good news is I think last year, in being a leading owner and stuff, that one of the most gratifying parts of that is, I think, of the 17 or 19 stakes performers, every one of them were homebreds, which was amazing. I think really gratifying for the entire operation, both externally and internally.
You know, since I'm looking at Produce Record, Music Note doesn't show anything. Is she gone?
No, I don't think we have anything yet. You're right.
Well, and there wasn't anything listed for 2020. That's why there's a 2-year-old by McLean's Music who's been named Gina, to watch for this year later in the year. And I just thought I'd ask and see what the status is. Well, in addition, Jimmy, to the wins, you had a couple of placements yesterday in the maiden races. There were some nice maiden races to follow up the big Saturday. So you got some 3-year-olds yet that are knocking on the door. What's left kicking around the operation, either unraced 3-year-olds or anything to be watching for?
Well, you know, I think that we've got a work in progress with a horse called Proxy, which Mike Stidham has, who's, you know, run very well at the fairgrounds, has had a good race in the LeCompte and was second last time out, and looks like he's going to run the Louisiana Derby. He's a Tap It Avamere Panty Raid, and I think he is a progressive, really kind of a little bit below the radar, but a rapidly improving 3-year-old, and I'm sure you well know the nice race that Prevalence, another 3-year-old, in his maiden win down at Gulfstream, had a little hiccup, got a little fever, missed some work, so we kind of have to redirect a little bit for where his next start will be. But he's both those two are probably very exciting 3-year-olds coming along as well.
Anybody though that that you guys are kind of waiting on?
I'd say we're what you're seeing is what we're getting right now. I think that's a pretty strong group of 3-year-olds, a really strong group of 3-year-olds.
No doubt. We talked to Brendan Walsh about Prevalence last week or the week, maybe the week be might have been the week before. Well, there's no shortage of other stake performers of varying degrees, and you also have got a maiden winner, Gershwin, that is a sibling as well. The Music Note 3-year-old that just broke the maiden
by Curlin. Yeah, he's very excited. You know, I think a little more maturity and trying to figure out. Hopefully, he wants to go further with. Mike's done some interesting things with him, sort of shorten him up a little bit and looking to stretch him back out. But, he's always got a world of potential. Let's just see if he can fulfill a little of it.
Well, there's certainly no shortage of excitement, I imagine, throughout the team. And, that goes from the from the breeding operation and the development side through to, you know, so many of these operations. I'll bring up some horses later with Mike Stidham too, like Pixelate, who's been kind of a personal favorite as well. So lots of good things ahead off of a magical Saturday, three graded stake wins and plenty in reserve, including next week, Max Field and the Big Cap, Jimmy Bell. Really appreciate the opportunity to congratulate you and Sheikh Mohammed's team on the eclipse last year, as well as all the early success in 2021.
Well, you're very, very kind, and certainly it's just nice to be a part of an operation of what Godolphin is. So we're all happy to be on board and excited to see what might be around the next corner.
Jimmy Bell, everybody, Godolphin, and of course, you know, one of Jimmy himself, part of one of the great families involved in the game in so many different areas. Well, we'll turn and bring Rich Migliore in and look ahead to Mike Stidham in.